ICS Magazine presents the Hitman Advertising Show, episode 19, How Much Can You Make in the Cleaning Business? Today, I'm going to be interviewing Doyle Bloss of Hydromaster, and we're going to be talking about how you can determine the amount of money that you'll be able to make in your particular area. This subject is super important, and I know that you're going to get a lot out of it. Now, listen in as I interview Doyle. Hello, everyone. This is John Braun, and I'm here with my good friend Doyle Bloss. He is the marketing and branding manager for Hydromaster. And today we're going to be talking about a very, very important subject. We're going to be talking about how much money can you actually make in the cleaning business? There's a lot of misconceptions. So I've got some great questions to ask Doyle. Doyle has been around in the industry since he was a little boy, if I'm not mistaken. And he knows all about the cleaning industry. And he knows all about the numbers. And he's one of the biggest experts that I know of on this subject of crunching these numbers and finding out really what it takes to actually make a profit and what it takes to actually make money in this business. So, Doyle, thanks for coming on the webinar with me today. And this is
glad to be with you, John. Glad to be with you. As a matter of fact, you talked about since I was a little boy. I'll tell everybody about the first carpet cleaning job that I ever did.
Good.
Was in 1974. My mother drove me to the job in a 1972 cherry red Ford station wagon, and we were using a Steamway 400 portable. Some of your listeners may remember those. They weren't exactly portable. They weighed about 140 pounds. And we cleaned, my friend and I cleaned a gas station. I wasn't even old enough to drive yet, but he was. But my mom did drive us there. We cleaned a gas station, and we did a pretty good job, I thought. It took us about 3 hours, and we made about $80. But the guy was so impressed, he gave us a $20 tip. And when you're that age, we thought with $100 in our pockets that we were set for life. But anyway, so yeah, it's been over 30 something years that I've been involved in the carpet cleaning industry. And during that time, I've had the chance to meet cleaners from all over the United States, actually all over the world, and talk about their marketplaces and what the potential is. And, you know, I think the biggest part of what we're talking about today is the grass isn't always greener on the other side of the fence.
Exactly.
When I take people through this presentation, the primary thing that I'm trying to accomplish is to get them to, number one, realistically look at what kind of business potential there is within the service area that they have chosen. Two, is the service area they've chosen realistic? And three, to put together numbers that demonstrate to potential stakeholders in their business what the revenue opportunity is. So many carpet cleaners have trouble getting bank loans to grow their business,
right?
Because they can't put together the numbers that demonstrate what the opportunity is.
And sometimes these guys even need to just go and present these numbers to their wife to convince them that they can start a carpet cleaning company.
Oh, absolutely, John. That's a fantastic point, and one that's often overlooked because, as you know, most spouses are dragged into this business.
Exactly. Mine was.
suddenly we come home and we tell the spouse that we want to start a carpet cleaning business, and oh, by the way, we can't afford to pay them, but would they mind answering the phones and doing the books?
Right.
And then the kitchen smells like traffic lane cleaner from all the stuff we have stored in the garage.
And you're cleaning rugs in the living room, and you're doing all kinds of crazy things.
Exactly. And so that we kind of drag them into it and then wonder a year in why they're not as excited about it as we are.
Right.
Because they've been slave labor. But that's another discussion. We'll talk about pricing sometime, because so many people make the mistake of setting up their pricing scenario based on their present expenses.
Exactly.
Yet they tell me that someday I'm going to be able to pay my wife or my husband for the work that they do in the, you know, as the support person in the business, but they never price it to where they can afford to start paying that person.
Exactly.
Or So anyway, but that's another discussion.
Right. But so it's important to not only know this for you, because I think, too, it's important that everybody understand this concept of how much money they can make for goal setting. But also, too, like you mentioned, to be able to present this information to a bank or somebody giving you a loan. And even, too, sometimes convincing your spouse or sometimes even really convincing yourself that this is, you know, what you need to be able to do. This is just a good operation that somebody should do in any business before they start a business, and maybe even after they've got the business started. Definitely, even after they got the business started, if they're trying to grow into a certain amount.
Well,
so.
And I'll give you another time when this evaluation is important. Many of your listeners, and I'm sure you, John, have been at that point where you had your first truck mount or your second truck mount, and your business is growing. But when is the right time to add the next unit, the next crew on the road?
Right.
Because you reach that point where you got more business than you can really keep up with, and you're afraid you're going to start to lose business because you're booking out so far.
Yes.
But you don't have enough business, you don't think, to pay for another truck and all its overhead and the people to run that truck.
Right.
And so this is a good exercise to see where you are versus where you can be, to determine when the right time is to expand the business.
Right, right. Good. So we've covered some reasons then why this is important. I think we've gotten that out of the way. Everybody should understand at this point that this information is good to know. So the big thing that I want to understand, too, is many cleaners that I talk to think that they can't make as much in an area with a low population or in an area with smaller homes or income that's a little bit lower than the national average. But have you found, obviously these factors are somewhat of a factor of success, but have you found that they're something that can cripple the chance of success? Maybe you're in a small town. Is there no way that you can have a successful cleaning business? Or what factors of these really contribute to whether they can, how much money they can make?
Well, that's a great question, John, and that's also why I like crunching the numbers, because numbers aren't emotional. We make fun of our accounting friends because of that.
Right.
But the fact is that numbers aren't emotional. They're not irrational. They tell us the facts whether we want to hear the facts or not. And when you crunch the numbers, you begin to see the opportunity that is or is not there based upon all those things that you talked about. People in small towns always wish they were in a bigger town. People in bigger towns always complain that they wish they were in a smaller town because in a bigger town they have too much competition. People always think their part of the country is not as economically advantaged as another part of the country. So that's what we do. When we walk through this exercise, we use the actual numbers. We're going to give them a source to go to get numbers from the U.S. Census, from different places like that, that tell us the realistic numbers, including probably the single most important number in determining this, which is, you know, how many residential households are in an area and what is the median or average household income.
Right.
Because those two factors are the two things that are from a residential carpet cleaning business or residential tile cleaning business or stone cleaning business are the ones that really pointed out.
Okay.
But you asked, I wanted to talk for a minute about to the people who are listening in that are in smaller towns.
Okay.
And because they're the ones that generally approach this with a, you know, you haven't been to my town. There's you know, a post office and a liquor store and a quick shop gas station, and there's just not a lot of people there. Well, what I found over the years in doing this is that generally it takes a population between 3 and 10,000 people in a service area to support $100,000 in revenue in professional carpet cleaning.
Nice.
Now, why that may sound like a wide variance, but that is because of all the factors that you mentioned, in terms of low population or the potential low median household income, or even in some areas, not a lot of residential homes. Where, you know, a professional cleaner has more opportunity to build that residential business. So the fact is that I've done this in towns, say in Wyoming, with three competitors who all lived in the same small town and all got along and all were trying to convince everybody else at the seminar that if they just learned to get along with their competition, there's plenty of business. Right. These guys were in a town of 10,000 people that had five truck mounts operating in it.
Wow.
And nice. All of them were doing as well as they wanted to do. That's another key factor. Everybody wants to be bigger, but do they want to pay the price it takes to be bigger? You know, and that's part of it too. So sometimes you just have to determine when you crunch these numbers that, you know what, I'm bringing home the income level that I desire for my lifestyle. And that's good enough.
Right. And it's the income level that you deserve. And it's the income.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to tell everybody that they've got to become a 10-truck carpet cleaning operation. Some of the happiest carpet cleaners I know are one-truck operators who bring home enough money to support their lifestyle and live happily ever after.
Right. So what you're saying is you don't have to be in a big metropolitan city like Houston, Atlanta, Chicago to be successful in the cleaning business.
No, as a matter of fact, I found in 20 years of doing this presentation and crunching numbers all over the world, literally, with this, that the two most the areas that usually have the most opportunity are the smallest towns and the biggest towns.
Right.
The ones that generally have a tendency to have a higher what I call crunch rate. In other words, there really is a reasonable expectation that there's a lot of competition here, and there may be a set ceiling on what we can do. Are generally the middle area towns, the right. towns that are between 100 and 300,000 people.
Right. Yep. And I own a cleaning company in Pensacola, Florida, and yes, it's a medium-sized town. The whole surrounding area is about 400,000. Pensacola itself is only about 100,000, but we've got like 80 carpet cleaning companies, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. All these guys are cutthroat and, you know, but hey, even then, if you market yourself right, you can still prosper and you can still do well.
Well, I'll give you an example. In the Seattle metropolitan area, there are over 500 carpet cleaners. The same applies for Denver.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 500 professional carpet cleaners. Now, that may seem overwhelming. That may seem like, oh, my gosh, that's impossible to compete in. But the fact is, when you crunch the numbers, there's plenty of business for everybody. And the other thing to remember if you're in a bigger town is that there are always people exiting the business.
Right.
For good reasons and for sad reasons.
Right.
There are always people exiting the business. There are always people coming into the business.
Right.
So competition's never going to go away, but it's never going to overwhelm. You know, to a well-run organization that's being marketed right, it's never going to overwhelm you either. So that's an important key point for our listeners to remember.
Yes. I mean, since I've been in business in my cleaning company 17 years. I can think of out of the maybe 80 that are in business right now, maybe five of them were in business when I started. Okay.
Exactly.
Now, one interesting thing you said just a minute ago, I can't remember the exact number, but you said between for each $100,000, it would require a population of between 3 and 10,000. People.
That's correct.
So realistically, possibly for every 3,000 people, there's $100,000. So, you know, if you're
in the right kind of marketplace,
right? In the right kind of marketplace.
You know, a town of 3,000 has a tourist attraction near it and has more commercial opportunity, more hotels, more restaurants, more things like that. Has a higher end revenue. One of the things that people have a tendency to look down upon, not down upon, but are military areas.
Mm-hmm.
Military areas, obviously the military doesn't pay people extraordinary money, but the good news is that everybody does get paid money.
Right, yes.
You know, if there's 3,000 people stationed on a base that live in a town, all 3,000 of them, they don't make a lot of money, but they do make money.
There's money there. Yeah.
And that you know, there are examples like that all the time that you can point at. College towns are a perfect example.
Right.
Their college towns have a high turnover rate, so you have more opportunity in the fact that the rental houses and the rental apartments are turning more often than they would in a non-college town.
Right.
So that isn't necessarily the type of business that every carpet cleaner wants to chase is apartments and rental houses.
Right.
But somebody's got to clean that stuff.
Right.
I mean, somebody has to, and then they are. And there's guys who make a reasonable living doing it.
Sure. We're in a military town in Pensacola, and absolutely, we get a lot of military move-ins, move-outs, and we have a special package just for them.
Perfect idea. Perfect idea.
So, and then just two, you mentioned that the two biggest factors when I talk about population was one, and the other one was the income, were two of the biggest factors in really deciding.
That's correct.
Okay, that's good. So what I'd like to do now is let's just go over a little bit and just really, can you tell us some? I know we're going to give them some ways that they can get some resources and some sheets. Do you want to give them that email address now, or do you want to wait toward the end of the webinar?
Let's give it to them now so that they know as we're talking, because just listening to this, they're going to, you know, the tendency is going to be, well, can I see it? Can I see it? And the fact is that hopefully what they'll do is they'll listen to this podcast and download the information and come back and listen to it again and start to fill in the numbers on their own.
Great. Exactly. The email address then, Doyle, was that they email to hitmanreport@yahoo.com, and then you will send them what exactly are you going to send them again?
What they'll receive in the mail are three primary things. The first is a set of instructions. It's called the Resource Guide for the Potential of Your Marketplace.
Great.
In the Resource Guide for the Potential of Your Marketplace, it's going to include a lot of things that we're about to talk about. But what it gives them is live links on the web to places where they can get these numbers that we're talking about, because we're going to ask them, you know, how many households are in your service area, and what is your realistic service area? What's the average household income? We're going to be looking at what's the average amount of square footage in a residential home. All this, one of the great things about being in the internet age is that data is readily available.
Right.
And so we're going to help them figure out, number one, how many people live in their town. Number two, how many houses there are. Housing units can be an apartment, obviously. But thirdly, is their residential, their average income, and then fourthly, the average size of the house, and then we're also going to talk to them about what percentage of that house has what type of flooring. In this day and age, when I first started doing this, we were calculating carpet cleaning income, but today it only makes sense to calculate carpet cleaning, tile cleaning, and stone cleaning, and for some can even that offer wood, you know, refinishing or recoating services, you can throw that into the mix too.
Absolutely. Well, good. And so then when they email hitmanreport@yahoo.com, do you want them to give their mailing address as well, or what information do you
need? Yes. What we need in order to really help them answer the question, if they have questions later, what we need them to provide you and I is obviously the name of their company, their email address, and their regular address, and make sure that it includes the city and the zip code.
Great.
And then the other thing that if they want to include later for us to help them is what we're going to call their realistic service area. Now, let me explain to you what I mean by that, John, because when we talk about what is their realistic service area, some people have it well defined. A company like yours that's been in business for a while, you know exactly what you're going after. You know how far out you're willing to drive your trucks, how often.
Right.
But if you're new in the business and you're just trying to make the lease payment on your truck or your portable, you're probably accepting work anywhere you can get it. But the example that I always use is when I was doing this presentation, one, there was a guy who was completely new in the carpet cleaning business. And he was running his company out of the back of a pickup truck. Nothing wrong with that.
I did it.
He was using a portable. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that either. He's new in business. He's trying to establish it. So when we asked him what his service area was, his answer was Los Angeles, Orange County, California.
Wow, that's huge.
Okay, so here's a guy who's got one truck and one machine who says he's trying to cover an area that has as much as 18% of the total population of the United States.
Right.
And for those of you who've never driven in Southern California, to get from the northern part of Los Angeles to the southern part of Orange County, even when it's not rush hour, can take 3 hours. In rush hour, you don't even go. I mean, you just don't. So the first thing we had to do with him was help him to understand he's going to be much better off to concentrate on a 20-block area where he lives than he is trying to clean carpets 20 miles away in what would take an hour and a half to drive there.
Exactly.
So when we're talking about realistic service area, there's rural guys who have to go 45 miles to the next town.
Right.
So they may be covering a 100-mile radius of their office, or I've even heard it as high as 200-mile radiuses of offices. In other places, you know, that know what they're doing in a larger town, say they're picking the Seattle area, they're not going to try and cover Seattle. They're going to try and cover, for instance, where our office is. There's a lot of cleaners who totally concentrate on Everett, Mukilteo, and Snohomish, simply because that's where all the Boeing employees, a lot of the Boeing employees live.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to go down to Tacoma or Renton to clean a carpet. Because it takes too long to get there, even though it's really quote unquote in the same town. So that's once the more you know about your service area, the more you can define what the realistic service area is and break down and get those population numbers by city or by county, rather than trying to enter in, you know, 3.7 million for the city of Seattle and all surrounding areas.
Right. Yeah, especially if you're a one-man operation. So part of this, too, is about figuring out who your right target is, and which is something I'm a huge proponent in, really figuring out where the money's at,
where
you want to go after.
That's exactly right, and that's one of the beauties of this presentation. People who go to marketing seminars and training that are cynical about what they're hearing. You've never had anybody like that, have you?
Never.
Not you've been doing?
Never at all.
They're a bit cynical about what they're being presented. I mean, you and I have been to many seminars where you can just tell by the body language that
right.
part of your audience is just not buying in yet.
Right.
They just don't believe what they're being told. And part of that is because of this idea of targeting your market,
right.
that there are different types of clients, high-end, medium, and low-end, if you want to call it that, whatever the terminology you use. In our calculations that we're going to show these folks how to do, it's including everything. It's saying that, yes, we accept the fact that there are some people who get their carpets professionally cleaned that are never going to be willing to pay above a certain price.
Yes.
And there are some people who will pay any price.
Right.
But there's a lot more of the people who have a certain ceiling. And so that's part of that's the beauty of the rationality of using the numbers rather than opinions to determine this. We're going to include everybody. And that's when they're going to reach a point at which they have to decide, what is my realistic market share? And what I always tell people, even if they're in the smallest town with no competition, as you know, as you teach them, you don't want everybody as a customer.
No. There are a lot of people I do not
There's just
clean
people
for.
You don't want to do work for.
Right.
Because of the type of the people they are. Now, I say this facetiously. My wife runs the customer service center at a home improvement place. She runs the customer service counter at, I won't name the name, but you guys can figure it out. And her job is customer service. And one of the ways that I try and encourage her is to just tell her that one out of four people is an unreasonable idiot.
Yeah.
If you just go into life with that idea that one out of four people is going to be unreasonable, it doesn't mean they can't be our friends. We all have friends that are dickerers or unreasonable or want more than their money's worth or argue about everything. We've all been to lunch with people that we know and love that don't treat the waitress the way that we think the waitress deserves to be treated. Doesn't mean we don't love these people or like these people. It just means they shouldn't be our customers.
Right.
And that it, once you begin to see that there's enough income opportunity in your area that you can not choose your customer, but be pickier about your customer, it relieves so much stress. So much stress. Because there are people in every town, big and small, that aren't very good potential customers. And while we may need some of those people when we're first starting out to get food on the table and make the loan payment on the equipment, our goal is to eventually be able to tell those people, you know what, I don't think we're the right company for you.
Sure. And sometimes that's the best thing that you can do. And from the very beginning, have your target market in mind, and you know exactly who you're going after. So this, yeah, doing an exercise like this can help immensely in getting this done.
Because what we're going to do is we're going to talk about everybody who has their carpets professionally cleaned by anybody.
Right.
So when we're going to crunch these numbers, I want the listeners right now to think of a large operation in your town that you don't like because of their price point or because of the way they advertise, their negative advertising, or whatever you don't like about them. Okay?
Okay.
We're going to give them their share. What we're going to see is once we give them their share, we can't compete with their TV advertising. We can't compete with their newspaper coupons or their online Groupon specials or whatever else. We can't. That's okay. We're going to see if there's enough business left for us.
Well, good. Well, do we want to just give them kind of a rundown example right now?
I sure will. As a matter of fact, what we're going to talk about real quickly is I'm just going to go through some typical numbers of what the type of thing that they're going to see. And are they going to be able to see the screen, John?
No.
That you're showing me?
This is going to be audio. It's all audio.
Okay, just audio. Okay, then that's what I thought. So I just want to kind of walk them through it. So what this we call it a market sector study. And as I mentioned, if they send their information to that email address that you gave them, they'll receive a resource guide which tells them how to fill out this Excel spreadsheet. Now, don't panic. I know some of you who heard the word Excel and immediately in your mind you thought, oh my gosh, I can't do that. Yes, you can. This Excel spreadsheet is an auto-fill-in spreadsheet that we're going to send you. You put the number in, it does the calculations. So you don't have to be an expert in Excel. Oh, I kid our bean counters around here. I call them pivot table freaks. You don't have to know how to run a pivot table. All you got to do is be able to look up numbers on the internet and put them in the right column, and it'll do the calculations for you.
And it's just like using Microsoft Word.
That's exactly right. Exactly. The way that we do it is we start by determining the number of households in a populated area. All right. And the particular, for example, that I'm going to look at, now I'm not going to tell you the town because that would be unfair to the people who live there, but this was the exact calculation that we did for their town. Their population was 55,000 people. Their average income was their average household income was $47,000. Now, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, in the 2012 census, the median or average household income in the United States is $51,017 per year. So what does that tell us about this town of 55,000 that has an average income of $47,000? It means that they're slightly below average.
Right.
Okay, slightly below average. For instance, in the area where Hydromaster is located, here in Mukilteo, Washington, across the street, over $14,000 work for Boeing. and they make good incomes. So the average income of this area is going to be higher than $51,017. But what we know is in this particular area, there's a population of 55,000 and an average income of 47. Now, you don't know that off the top of your head. Don't worry. The resource guide that we're going to send you gives you direct links, live links. All you have to do is click on them and go to them that will take you to where you can get these numbers. And if you don't believe the first one that you get, we give you more than one. So you can go to different places and compare to see if everyone generally agrees about your area and how many people live there. So, because, you know, in the internet, there, I know this is going to shock some of our listeners, but you can find bad information on the internet. So, check. Don't be afraid to double check and see if the number you're coming up with is reasonable. So here's the rule we go by. A good general rule is to divide the total population by 2.2 to get the number of households. So if you can't find the number of households, all you can find is population, just divide it by 2.2. Now, if you live in a college town, a tourist area that has a lot of people who don't live there year-round, or a retirement area, got to pick on you Floridians, then you divide the population by two because you have more, you have less people living per household.
Less children.
Obviously, yeah. Right. In Florida, you've got a lot of retired people, so there's usually two people living in the house, not three, four, or five.
Right.
But you also have more dogs and cats because they have to have companions. So anyway,
money.
So we take that. And then, so once we know the number of households, then we can go to where the U.S. Census Bureau provides us with the average square feet per residential household. Okay. The average square feet per residential household. Now this is going to sound high to a lot of people. But this is what the government says. The Midwest has the smallest houses at an average of 2,265 square feet. The largest houses are in the Northeast, which kind of surprised me. I would have thought the South would have the bigger houses, or the West. But the Northeast has the bigger houses, so New England. Obviously has bigger houses, but the range isn't that big. It's between 2,265 square feet and 2,613 square feet. So if you don't want to look that up, just take the average and go with 2,450.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the next question that an inquiring mind is probably already thinking about is, wait, but Doyle, but John, not every square foot in the house has carpet. Well, that's right. So the next thing we do is we can go to floor covering statistics that we get from two different places that really get their data from the same place to tell us in these houses how much of it is carpet, how much is tile, how much of it is stone, how much of it is wood, how much of it is resilient. And when it doesn't add up to 100, I guess, and to pick on my friend Joey Pickett in Kentucky, because I always bring this up, he's got to be servicing people who have dirt floors, okay? So, but the fact is, not all of it is going to have carpet in it. And sure. So let me give you some statistics real quick there to help people. As a general rule, even today, with all the changeover we've had in the last 10 years to hard surface floors, 55% of the average residential home is carpet.
Wow.
12.6% is ceramic tile, 6% is stone, and about 5.5% is wood. The second largest after carpet is resilient or luxury vinyl tile, which is almost 20%.
Mm.
That's where the growth area is.
I'm
that's
surprised
not
there's still that
thing.
Much carpet. That's nice. That's
yes,
good.
Yes. That's. I was surprised too, but that's the statistics that come out from the home builders. So that gives you that. So you can take the average square foot, and then you can figure out how many houses, what's the average square foot, what's the percent of that square foot that's dedicated to carpet, and that gives us the average square feet of carpet per household. in this area. In the area that we're describing, which was that town of 55,000, with an average square foot of 2,613 square feet, what that tells us is that about the other number that I forgot to mention is that not all the house has flooring, that has flooring that's installed.
Sure.
So in this case, with our spreadsheet, we determined that in this town, the average house has about 900 square feet of carpet.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Good.
So now we're at a number that I think more people will buy into. Okay,
right.
I'll buy that.
Right.
On average, the average house that I serve, the average household that I serve, has about 900 square feet of carpet. It's 862 square feet. All right? So what that tells us, in this particular town, there's 21.5 million square feet of carpet that can be cleaned.
Good.
All right, John? I'll bet it is. 21 million. But I'll bet you're going to be you can ask me the next question. Is all of that carpet getting professionally cleaned right now?
Not at all. How much of it is?
That's a great question. And that's part of the resource guide too. What you'll do then is you'll take and you'll say, okay, we know that there's a range that's provided for that. The numbers that I believe hold, and here's something else to keep to think about. If you're in a town with a lot of good competition, the percentage of people who get their carpet professionally cleaned is higher, not lower.
Right.
The more good competition you have, the big franchise runs their cute ad on TV, don't knock that.
Right. That helps you.
What they're doing is they're building awareness of carpet cleaning, professional carpet cleaning,
right,
and its benefits. So the fact is that if you look at what the people who would really study this the most, which are the carpet mills, they will tell you that about 35% of installed carpet gets professionally cleaned, and 35% gets do-it-yourself cleaned.
Right.
The scary part of that is not the rental market or the do-it-yourself market or the I own my own machine market. It's the fact that 30% of the carpets out there never get cleaned.
Uh-huh.
Period.
That's the competition.
So, 35% gets professionally cleaned, 35% gets do-it-yourself clean, and 30%. Now, some of you that are listening are probably thinking, I don't think one out of every three houses in my town gets professionally cleaned. Well, what I can tell you is I've never seen any statistic gathered by anybody, and I've seen studies done by carpet mills. I've seen studies done by huge conglomerates that were thinking about starting a franchise in the carpet cleaning business. So they were, they spent millions of dollars on research. I have never seen a number lower than 20%.
Nice.
So worst case scenario, one out of five carpets in your town gets professionally cleaned.
Nice.
On average, one out of three carpets does. So let's go back to our town of 55,000. If one out of every three carpets, or about 35%, gets professionally cleaned, then that tells us that there's 7.5 million square feet of carpet that gets cleaned in this town. All right? 7.5 million square feet of carpet. Now, the next question that should pop into your mind is, how often does it get cleaned? Well, here's the thing to remember. Every carpet cleaner has a customer that hasn't, we all hear about these jobs. We all talk in our war story times. These are the jobs we talk about. I cleaned this carpet last week that was 12 years old that had never been cleaned.
Sure.
But here's what I challenge somebody on. If you're a good carpet cleaner, once you get a customer, they're going to clean on a regular basis. Sometimes regular means every 3 months. Sometimes it means once every 3 years. But they are going to get clean, their carpet clean. Once they've had a good carpet cleaner clean their house, it's not like they, I'm never going to do that again.
Right.
Yes. They don't do that, right? Yes. I mean, think about that for a minute.
Right.
Once you've served a client, your challenge is not getting them to clean it again. It's getting them to clean it again sooner.
Exactly.
Or on a regular basis.
And that's where newsletters and postcards and marketing and email marketing.
That's what you're all about, John. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. This is where real marketing kicks in, okay? That's where the real marketing kicks in. Is you know, taking that clientele, getting it down to where we're serving customers that we really want to serve, and then getting a higher average take every time we go to the house, cleaning the carpet and the tile and the stone and the upholstery and all the other stuff, and getting them to do it more often.
Exactly.
So many guys are worried about getting new business when they should be worried about getting more business out of the business they've already got.
Right.
Right. All right, but let's go back to our numbers, because remember, we're not going to be emotional or irrational. We're going to use numbers. All right, in this town, the person that I was interviewing had a relatively high regard for his competition. So based upon that, I said, then my belief would be that the 7.5 million square feet of carpet that gets cleaned on average once every 2 years.
Sure.
Okay?
That's realistic.
Realistic. So that means that there's 3.77 million square feet of carpet in this town that gets cleaned every year. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's the facts, Jack.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth. That's not based upon some pie-in-the-sky number. That's using the numbers and calculating it. 3.7 million square feet of carpet gets cleaned every year in this town. So that's what brings us to probably the part where our listeners have to really do their most soul searching, okay? They've got to look inside of themselves and think about what their capabilities are and what they're going to do. For instance, how many times do you read on an industry forum or talk to a carpet cleaner who just complains that there's just nobody out there worth hiring? All the time. Very common complaint. Well, the fact is that sometimes that's true. But more often than not, the problem isn't the people that they're hiring. The problem is them. Nobody wants to work for them.
Sure.
Okay? Now, I tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with that. You may be one of those people that is such a picky person, that's so wound into being perfect that you can't find anyone who will clean the carpet the way you will and do it to your satisfaction. Nothing wrong with that. What that means is that limits the size of the business you can build. You can't be a $3 million a year carpet cleaning operation with one truck.
Right.
Can't do it.
Impossible.
Okay. But that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means you need to look yourself in the mirror. And you know, what I often teach people in a seminar setting on this, especially if I'm talking to married people, is to go home and sit down with their spouse and say to their spouse, I want you to be totally honest with me. You know me better than anybody. Do you think good people would want to work for me?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
And they may say no. And that's okay. It just means that limits it. So in this case, I asked this guy the two most important questions that are really a part of this study that we're doing. These are the two key questions that our listeners have to answer. The rest of this is all based on the numbers, okay? Number one, how many competitors exist in your area? How many other carpet cleaners are there? Well, that's not hard to figure out. Just Google carpet cleaners in Pensacola, Florida,
right,
and up they start popping, okay, in your case. Now, you got to look at it, because how many competitors exist in your area? If I'm in a suburb of a large town, there may be a large franchise that sends trucks out there, but they don't concentrate on that town. So this is a harder number to guess. It wasn't for this guy. This guy done his homework. He knew exactly. He said immediately 8. that there are 8 carpet cleaners in this town of 55,000 people. And one of those he included was a bigger company coming from farther away. But here's what he said. They do it right. When they come to my town, they only come 1 or 2 days a month, and they have the jobs lined up, but they do a good job, and then they go back, and I don't have to worry about them till the next time they're back on that day, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's how many competitors. Now, if you just are just struggling like crazy to come up with that number, on our spreadsheet, we do tell you, if you just can't come up with that number, just take your population and divide it by 10,000.
Right.
Okay? Thank you. And that'll give you a reasonable guesstimate, okay, of how many competitors exist in an area. In this case, he came up with 8, okay? So the next question that our listeners have to answer is, and they can do this 2 ways, John, and this is an important point. Number one, I do this twice. I do it once for where I am now and once for where I want to be. Because number one, it's going to tell you whether you have an accurate grasp on where you are now. You may be underestimating your market share or overestimating your market share, or you may be right on. The second time is do it again with where you want to be. What market share do you realistically expect to get?
That is such a good idea.
In this case, the guy told me that he believed that his market share now was 25%. So 25%. So that means he's going to clean 1 out of every 4 carpets that gets cleaned in his town. That means he's a pretty dominant player in his marketplace. I happen to know this guy. He is a dominant person in his marketplace. Dominant meaning that he's got a grasp of what his business should do. Mm-hmm. Not that he's necessarily the biggest. He's one of the bigger ones, but he's not the biggest. All right, once again, if our listeners just don't know what to do here, okay, they just don't know what to do, they can't determine their market share, then just divide it up by the number of competitors. In this case, if there's 8 competitors, divide 8 by 100%, and that's your market share. If we just everybody divided it up evenly in our town. Hopefully that's not happening because that's called socialism. But anyway, the fact is, it's just divided up evenly. And here's what I tell people. There are always people in the carpet cleaning business. It's just the nature of our business. And the same would hold true for plumbers, for electricians, for lawn service, for chimney sweeps. It isn't just our industry. If you have 8 competitors, 1 or 2 are likely as big as they want to be. I won't say they're on their way out or on their way down. They're just not in growth mode. They sure. take whatever they can get, okay? There's usually one that's been put into business by somebody else. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're not really self-motivated. Our leasing company, Hathaway Capital, sees that all the time. When daddy is putting little son into the business, sometimes it works out great. But I always tell our leasing folks, if daddy's the only one who ever talked to you, we're going to take that truck mount back in about 6 months.
Wow.
Because daddy's putting the kid in the business because he wants the kid out of the house, but the kid isn't motivated to go out and make the business work.
Exactly. Well, why should he? Okay? Daddy's taking care of him.
Exactly. So let's take the flip side of that. We've been talking about the guys that are in. Let's also say that in every town, in this town, if there's 8 competitors, there's probably 1 or 2 that are just as good or better than I am. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. We can be real. We can say that, can't we? Can't we admit, absolutely. You know what? There's a carpet cleaner in my town who's just got his act together.
Sure.
He knows what he's doing. He has the prettiest trucks. He has the prettiest advertising. He may have the prettiest technicians. I don't know. But he's got the prettiest operation. And he's what I want to be, but I'm not there yet. Nothing wrong with saying that. That's why so much of this is looking in the mirror. That's why you want to do this with just you and the stakeholders in the business. Like you said, your spouse. Mm-hmm. Sit down and do this together.
Sure.
And in this case, he said he wanted to do 25% of the business. But let's just, for our listeners, let's say that if there were 100 carpet cleaners, then that means, and we divide it up, we'd get 1%.
Right.
But in this case, he thinks he can get 25% of the business. All right, with that, we said that there was 3.7 million square feet of carpet in his town. Divide that by 25% means that 943,000 square feet of carpet is what he should be cleaning a year in his business.
Nice.
The next part of our analysis, and this is the part we're not going to spend any time on because it's a whole other discussion, but that is how much are you going to charge?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how much are you going to charge per square foot or per room? Figure out your average square foot price. If you're a room pricer and you do $20 a room or $5 a room or $50 a room, I don't care. Figure out what the average square foot price that is. Now, this is a good point to talk, and this is, John, where somebody like you can help him. If I price my business at 50 cents a square foot, then the next thing I need to understand is I'm never going to have 100% market share, right?
Exactly. It's too much for the market.
Exactly.
For everybody.
There's the whole market can't afford 50 cents a square foot.
Sure.
Okay. So that's choosing our price has a lot to do with what the market that we select.
Bingo.
Okay.
Right.
And generally people choose their price and then go after the market. You and I know they got to do it the opposite.
Right.
Choose the market, and that will determine the price point to a great extent.
Exactly.
Now, obviously, we'll have a whole discussion another time about how to price your service and what should go into it. And that's another we're going to give them another way to do that sometime in the future that's not emotional. It's not irrational. It crunches the numbers.
Good.
And when you crunch the numbers and you come up with 30, if you come up with 34 cents a square foot, that's the facts.
Right.
All right. And we'll talk about what that means. Because one of the good things about our industry and one of the bad things about our industry is that you can go broke really slowly.
Especially when they're the ones out doing the labor, if they're the guy out.
Exactly.
The truck,
but you can go broke really slowly.
Yes.
If you put your price where you're not making enough money in our business, you can get away with it for a long time.
Right.
Because we're a cash rich business, we can always go out and generate cash. You and I can go stand on a street corner and hand out sheets of paper that say carpet cleaning, 20 bucks a room, and we'll get some business.
Sure. And we'll stay busy.
And we'll stay busy. But the key is that most people are priced slightly under their cost.
Right.
And that's the worst place to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because you'll go broke slowly, and that's the most painful way to go broke.
Right.
If you're going to go broke fast and choose another profession, okay? But so in this case, he charges 32 cents a square foot. Now listen carefully. This is based on the numbers in a town of 55,000 with a 25% market share at 32 cents a square foot. His goal, residential carpet cleaning income, is $300,000
a year. Nice. Yeah.
Now, that's just carpet cleaning, just residential. So $300,000. Now, we're not going to have time today to take them through the rest of this, but the analysis goes on from there. The next thing we do is we ask them to look at their tile and stone cleaning market share. Then we ask them to look at their we kind of combine hard surfaces and do that. And then we look at commercial. We haven't even talked about commercial yet.
Wow, yeah.
Now, in this let me show you what we did with this particular customer. We did the calculation, we took it all the way through, and we determined based on the numbers he gave us that his company can do $300,000 in carpet cleaning residentially, $120,000 in commercial carpet cleaning. Now keep in mind that commercial carpet cleaning is an even bigger area where you have to determine what you're going to go after. You can't go after Class A commercial and the pancake house.
Right.
It's two different universes, okay? So based upon his, he wanted to go after Class A commercial. He didn't want to clean Pizza Hut at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
Okay. Good for him. Nothing wrong with cleaning Pizza Hut at 3 o'clock in the morning, but he knew he didn't want to do that. And he wasn't real confident about his hard surface capabilities. You know, that's where you can come in and help him on marketing that. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, his whole thing was, I have customers with stone and I have customers with tile, but there's just not a lot of them that want to hire a professional cleaner and pay the price I need to charge them to do that. But what, even with his pessimism, we came up with 81,000 in stone and tile income.
Sure.
In his town.
That's reasonable.
All right. So here's what we got. A town of 55,000 has the capability for this customer in cleaning only. We haven't talked about restoration. That's a whole different discussion. For 500,000.
Nice.
Now, this is the beauty of this, John. At the very beginning of this, when I was talking to this customer, I said to him, how big do you want to be? And you know what he told me? I'd like to do about $500,000 a year in cleaning and run 2 to 3 trucks.
Good. Good. And you know what?
Okay.
I'm sure.
So what does he now know?
Well, yeah. Now he knows.
He now knows that his goal is reachable.
Right. Yeah.
He crunched the numbers and did it himself. So that's another way. Before you ever start out in this calculation, write down what it is you think you want to achieve.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of people get into can I talk about this? A lot of people get into restoration because they think they have to.
Right. That's where all the money's
okay?
at.
That's where all the money's at. That's exactly right. They get into restoration because they think they have to. But you and I know the price they pay.
Yes. A lot of
the
late
price
hours,
they pay is not
minute.
Being there, not being there to watch their 4-year-old open his Christmas presents.
Yes, you got it.
Because we both know that when the restoration jobs, it's Murphy's Law. The restoration jobs come in at the most unfriendly time to our family life.
Right.
Now, there's nothing wrong with getting into restoration. It's but understand if you have to. I don't think most people have to.
No.
Get into restoration because you want to,
right.
Not because you have to or you think that all the money's on the restoration side. You talk to any big restorer, and they will tell you that there's a sweet spot in restoration, that they gave up their life for 5 or 7 or 10 years to get to the point where they could be big enough and profitable enough to restore their lifestyle because they had enough people working for them to go answer that water damage job at 2 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Eve.
You're right. I've had several people tell me almost the exact same thing.
And that's why running the numbers, crunching numbers, and we're going to send them a water damage restoration study to go along with this. But I don't want them to jump there. I want them to see how much cleaning business there is before they go after the because you and I know that, you know, talking about getting the water damage business, then you're talking about, you know, how do you get into or how do you compete with preferred provider programs,
right.
You know, 24/7, 365 service. And that's, you know, what I always talk about is there's a difference between doing water damage because your customers are demanding it of you and doing water damage because you have to.
Right.
I'm sure last January and February when it got really cold in Pensacola, John, you were out sucking up some water.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have any choice. These were your clients, and there wasn't enough trucks out there to suck up all the water from all the broken pipes in January and February.
Right, and then what happens is all the carpet cleaning jobs cancel, so what else do you do?
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Which, by the way, reminds me of, if our listeners are listening to this and it's November, December of 2014, if you did a lot of restoration work in January and February, I mean a lot, you better go talk to your tax accountant because your tax accountant's probably going to tell you you need to buy some equipment
right
before the end of the year. A lot of whenever we have broken pipe, what I call broken pipe water damage, which we had in January and February, and we may start having some today. It was 22 degrees when I got up at my house this morning. That's cold for Seattle.
Yeah.
Well, when you have broken pipe water damage, you get a lot of people making a lot of money that don't typically make restoration money, and they don't think about that in how they approach their taxes, and they're going to end up paying out too much money to Uncle Sam instead of reinvesting it in their business. So that's a whole nother discussion also, but that's the beauty of doing this study, is that all the different variables that people can throw into the equation. You've never been to my town, John. You don't know how crappy the competition is. You've never been to my town, Doyle. You don't understand that this happens or that happens, or that everybody in my town's a cheapskate, or that all the other carpet cleaners in my town are sleazeballs, or the opposite. All the other carpet cleaners in my town are brilliant millionaires, and I can't compete against them. When you take out all the emotion and just crunch the numbers, let me close, and you may have some questions. Let me close by reminding everybody that we'll be glad to send them the SIF, but let me close with one thing that I always close this whole presentation with, kind of a call to arms. When you go through this calculation, there is a possibility that at the end, you'll look at the number and you'll go, well, I'm doing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong. That means you've got a really good grasp on your marketplace and your business. And what does that tell you? If you've put what you think your max numbers are in there, and you're doing better than that, now it's time to consider opening up in a different area.
Good.
That's the key. Don't open up in a different area because you think your area is crappy.
Right.
Open it up when you've done the numbers and taken the emotions out of it, and you've said, you know what, I've maxed out my market share here.
Right.
A perfect, for instance, of that is if you do price yourself at a high enough price point, you will reach a point where the people who can afford you have ran out in your town. You've got them all, or you and the good competition has them all. Then you look at opening up in another town.
Sure, or adding on services. Right.
Because what happens is, and you know this, when you really – I'm not talking about putting a phone number in to act like you're in a town 40 miles away. I'm talking about setting up a physical operation in that second town.
Right.
When you set up a second physical operation in that town, you're doubling your overhead.
Yes.
So you darn well better be at a point where you've done as much in your own backyard as you think you can.
Right. Too many guys do that prematurely, and they open up and go to another town. Then they end up not making very much profit, if any profit, in two locations instead of one, which is worse than not making any profit in one location.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
and that's another point. You know this, where there's a sweet spot. There's a sweet spot that you can get to that says, you know what, I could do this much business in this town and take more time, take more vacations, make the money I'm wanting. But the getting to that point is sometimes the big thing that people have a tendency to do is they have a tendency to think that marketing is the answer to not working hard.
Right.
That's good marketing means you're going to work harder than you've ever done.
Exactly.
What it means, though, is that hopefully it's going to be less physical and more brain activity work.
Right. And more profitable at the end of the day.
And more profitable work. And that's the beauty of crunching the numbers.
Right.
Is that it takes all the emotion out of it, all the opinions out of it. I have opinions, you have opinions, lots of people would disagree with your and my opinions. That's okay. Walk through this. Go through these numbers. Be realistic about the numbers. And then when you get done, and I can tell you, in the 25 years I've been doing this presentation, I presented it to over 3,000 carpet cleaning companies. In that amount of time, I've encountered about 30 that had maxed out their business.
Wow. Well, good.
And those 30, you know what I told them? Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Pat yourself on the back. You're doing a great job. You're teaching the next seminar. You're going to be the co-presenter because you've got it figured out. But out of the rest. Now, you know, the other thing I want to, one last thing, I don't want people to be overly optimistic on this. I don't want them to be, you know, think that they can get market share that they can't get. I don't want them to price themselves at a point which they can't back up the service with. You know, a lot of people don't understand you can get paid for being nice and polite and not using certain language.
Right, yes.
And dressing a certain way and acting a certain way. You get paid for that.
Sure.
Now, if you don't want to do it, that's fine. You know, that's what I always tell people. You can be who you are in your carpet cleaning business, but that's going to help set what your market share potential can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think this is one of the critical things that we just miss sometimes in the cleaning industry. Just the business intelligence and wisdom of the stuff that you're talking about is just huge. And the thing that some of us get, and, you know, even myself included sometimes, you know, crunching the numbers is kind of like one of the last things that some of us always want to do. But yet it's so critical to understand what we can do, what goals we should have, and what there is out there. And, you know, the sheet, I know they can't see it because this is a podcast, it's an audio, but once they get this, they're going to see the simplicity in all of this. I hope that nobody is listening to this and going, oh my gosh, but Doyle's done a great job in outlining this, and it really is just a few things that you pop in, and basically the spreadsheet's going to figure it out yourself. So no, it's probably not maybe what some of you are thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to crunch and get these, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 different numbers. It's not that hard. It really, the spreadsheet does it for you. And all you need to do, we'll give out the email again, is just email hitmanreport@yahoo.com. And Doyle's going to email you this great stuff. Give him your name, your company name, and your address, right? And
that's exactly right.
And he'll get that to you.
But, and including the state, because that'll help us help them if they have some questions later, to give us as much information as they can about where they are in their service area. Especially, you know, like I said, the people that have the biggest difficulty doing this are the people who've carved out part of suburbia in a large metropolitan area. And but generally they already know, you know, like you know, what areas around Pensacola you want to cover and what areas you don't. So, you know, the hardest part is, you know, because I've done this with guys that have 60 truck operations in Minneapolis and 100 truck operation in California, and they really are covering, you know, the entire metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
It's the in-between guy. So if your service area really is L.A. Orange County, it's not that hard. But the biggest big guys can cover L.A. Orange County as a whole. So if you're in a bigger town, give yourself some patience and work through it, and don't be afraid to ask questions.
Right. And Doyle, are you there for if they have specific questions about this stuff? Can they email it?
Yeah, all they need to do is send the email to their questions to the email. The best way for you and I to help them is by email. That'll help them write out what it is they want to know, and we'll try and answer them that way.
Great, great. And this is just great stuff. I sure appreciate this. You know, and just realistic. I mean, I know several guys that are in towns of 40,000, 50,000 that do make, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 in sales a year. Some guys don't think that that's even possible in a city that small, but it is. I personally know guys that do that and even a little bit more than that in towns that size.
I think that the towns, like I told you, it's the middle town. I think the sweet spot for population is between 40,000 and 80,000.
Right.
If I can get a town, and I've done this before with people to say, you know, choose a town. You think you want to move, choose a town and go through this. And, you know, some of the best opportunities that I've found in crunching these numbers are little towns in Kansas.
Right.
Or little towns, you know, and that's part of what you've got to understand. If you want to live where everyone else in the universe wants to live, there's going to be a lot of carpet cleaners in that. If you want to live where you can create the best lifestyle, you can be one of the, can we say, wealthiest people in town?
Sure.
There are towns you can go to where you can dominate.
Sure.
You can absolutely dominate. The hardest part of going to a smaller town, you know, smaller being 40 to 60, not small town, is that if there aren't already good carpet cleaners there, it's going to take you some time to build the awareness of why professional carpet cleaning is valuable.
Exactly.
That's why good competition is always a good thing, not a bad thing.
You know, one of the best things for the water damage industry has been all these Surf Pro commercials we see all the time.
Absolutely.
People already understand water damage now. It's great.
I
love it. So, well, thank you, Doyle. We definitely need to do another one of these on pricing, but we'll schedule that sometime soon. And again, let's give out the email one more time. It's hitmanreport@yahoo.com, and Doyle will get back with you. Just give us your name, your address with your city and state, and then we'll get you this information with the spreadsheet, and you'll be able to figure this stuff out.
Yeah, and one other way, John, if they want to get in, a great way to get in touch with me is there's a information request section on the HydroMaster website. So if they're interested in learning more about HydroMaster and our products, the different the equipment, the tools, the chemicals that we have, anything like that, I invite them to go to HydroMaster.com. Also, we have one of the most, John can tell you this because he helps us out all the time, we have one of the most active Facebook pages in the cleaning industry. It's facebook.com/cleansolutions, or you can just enter in HydroMaster in the search bar and we'll come up. Join us there. And also, we have a lot of articles at our blog which cover some of the things that we talked about today, which is the Clean Scene blog. It's a WordPress blog, so just enter in the Clean Scene blog, all one word, .wordpress.com.
Great.
And that'll get you to there. But HydroMaster.com, they can get in touch with me, and that has all the information about all of our products, including we talked about hard surfaces. A lot of people, like this guy I was talking to, that was really nervous about hard surfaces. We have a new app that you can download to your phone that you can be on a job site and stumble across a type of stone or tile that you've never stumbled across before, and it gives you the exact directions on how to clean it.
Oh, that is cool. Where do you get that app at?
That's CleanMaster. It's called CleanMaster Solutions.
Okay.
It's available for Windows, Android, and what's that other company? Oh, yeah, Apple. So it's called CleanMaster Solutions, and it's a mobile app that basically walks them through how to all the cleaning procedures for some of the stuff they may not be as familiar with, including some of the more delicate upholstery.
Perfect. That is perfect. Well, good. Well, thank you, Doyle. This has been just a great resource. I hope all of you take advantage of that. That email address one more time, hitmanreport@yahoo.com. And I sure appreciate all the information you've given us, Doyle. This is good stuff, and we'll do another one soon on pricing.
Thanks, John. Always enjoy being with you. Keep doing what you're doing. People like you that are out there every day helping carpet cleaners grow their businesses and fulfill their lifestyle dreams. I've been in this for almost 40 years, and there's still not a better industry in the world.
You got it.
In terms of the people that are in it and the opportunity they have, it's just still my favorite place to be.
You got it. Well, great. Well, thank you, Doyle. Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Take care.